get into 265, right?
265. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Outlaw Picks podcast. Manscaped. Me? Shave your balls.
Oh.
I did the read for you. See that?
is that what we're doing? Manscaped, shave your balls. There you go, guys. Thanks for that, Dan. That was an excellent sponsor read. If it's all right with you, I might...
We've actually literally just been testing these against the web. Well, say we.
I'm glad that sentence is going where I said we were not shaving each other's balls.
We were not
testing it like
not
that.
Not today.
No, that's not the last time.
That's for the Patreon account.
There you go.
We've just been testing this on Mystery's, the web between his fingers.
Yeah. Well, we were persuading him to try and wax it. That wasn't happening.
He wasn't having it. Or singe him with a candle. He wasn't having that either.
No. Anyway, so yeah, I think he's going to have a crack, isn't he?
Mm.
Excuse the pun. You can shave that as well if you want. Manscaped have just launched their 4.0 performance package, the same package that we are trying to persuade Mystery to use and utilize. So the performance package comes with the razor, obviously. Cool.
I love the little lights on the end.
Ceramic blade, light. You're not going to make any slip-ups with that. It comes with the ear and nose trimmer, which I'm particularly interested in.
The weed whacker.
Yeah, the weed whacker. It's the one.
Sticking all your orifices.
Yeah.
Most of your orifices.
We do not condone shoving that in all of your orifices, just so we're on the same page here. We also have a reviver, a ball toner, which Mystery is all about, and a ball deodorant. And if you buy this particular performance package, it will come with this very nice this wash bag. You can put everything in. What was that program?
It's like QVC, this
and
that.
No, what was the program when it all trailed in front and you had to remember it?
Oh, there was always a cuddly toy on it, wasn't there?
Yeah, what was it called?
Fucking hell. Wrong podcast.
Yeah,
definitely. I wouldn't have known that.
Wrong people,
second.
Wrong podcast. You'll also get a pair of free underpants, free boxer shorts when you buy the performance package. So there you go. That is the new Manscaped 4.0. Manscaped are the leaders in male grooming. They have sold over 2 million male grooming packages, which is very impressive and great for their books, I would imagine.
So that's 4 million balls that have been shaved.
Give or take a couple, maybe. Might be a few injuries along the way.
That's true.
The Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, weed whacker, ears, nose and hair trimmer, crop preserver, ball deodorant, crop reviver toner, performance boxer briefs, and a travel bag to hold all your goodies in.
Look at that.
If you go to manscaped.com and use the code FULLREPTILE, you will get 20% off. And free shipping. Right. I need to circle back to beer 52 because we did the read on the last day of the month. And I believe we said all of your beers are going to come from.
Oh, did you fuck it up?
The wrong country. Yeah, I kind of fucked it up.
Of course
so
you did.
We're going to circle back around. Beer 52 is the biggest beer club in the UK. Every month they deliver a case of craft beer directly to your door. Each month is a different theme. And do not listen to which theme I tell you it is, because it's quite likely to be something else from experience. If you go to beer52.com/OP, you'll be able to claim a free case of beer. All you have to do is pay the postage. This month's theme is Chicago. What did I say last week? Croatia. It's not Croatia. It's Chicago. Vastly different. So all of your craft beers will be from the windy city of Chicago. By claiming your free case, you'll join their monthly beer subscription at £24 a month. If you no longer want to continue with that, you can pause or you can cancel at any time. But jump on board at beer52.com/OP and you will get the first case of beer for free.
And we would have them all on the table here in front of us
had
the Raptors not drank them.
Yeah, they've just guzzled them, but they were from Croatia.
I saw Mystery rubbing one in his armpits. I don't know what.
As long as he's not trying to shave his balls with them,
that's true.
Then we're probably ahead of the game. So there we go. We also have a couple of little bits of news, don't we? So we've relaunched the Full Reptile website, which is looking very dapper, if I don't say so myself. Loads of new lifestyle t-shirts, loads of new training t-shirts, all on the website, fallreptile.co.uk. It's looking pretty cool, and there's heaps of new stuff on there. New snapbacks, new t-shirts, everything's on there. So jump on there, go and have a look and check that out. And the last thing we've got to say is Rough House Uncensored.
The
highest, the highest risk product that we put out there.
We picked a new tagline yesterday for the show, didn't we? The tagline for Rough House Uncensored is "Not for Mums."
It's definitely not for mums.
Not for mums.
It is uncensored by name and by nature, but it is hilarious. It gives you a real deep insight into what's going on up at the gym. And the most important thing on the Patreon account, there's a lot more coaching detail. So you get a behind the scenes look at Dan and Jimmy coaching our pro team, and it's very good. It's very insightful. It's very worth it. So jump on Patreon /fullreptile and you'll be able to see the goings on up at the gym with the pro squad.
Yeah, it's like
and laugh a lot.
£3 a month, or
£3,
$4.50.
Yeah,
$4.50, something like that. But yeah, but like so, like normally an episode on YouTube would be somewhere between sort of 6 and 10 minutes.
Yeah.
The most recent Patreon's 43 minutes long.
Yeah, right. So it's between 30 and 45 minutes. Yeah. A lot of coaching, a lot of detail. Yeah. It's a good insight. It's a good way of absorbing information
without watching instructionals, because they tend to drag a little bit.
But it's natural as well, isn't it? Yeah. This is how it's being taught.
Yeah.
And seeing people doing it as well
and struggling with it and being corrected.
And you get to watch Jimmy just smash everyone into a million pieces.
Honestly, so it's hilarious.
Always.
Like, there's one premiere in tonight and I'm watching the time because it's like, okay, it's 10 to 7. Okay. Premieres at 10. I want to watch it live because I like to see other people's reactions
It's unbelievable who messaged me, like people that I would not expect that would want to watch it, and they love it.
It's like only a small demographic of people have found it, but the ones that have found it are like addicted to it.
Absolutely love it. It is, you know, it's real reality TV, isn't it?
Well, we'll just keep it going, and it will follow us into the new gym and all the guys fighting and, you know, we can travel with them on the road and all that kind of stuff. And
Josh wants to go to Ibiza for the 100th episode.
Okay. We can't be that far off it already, though. That's the problem.
No, I know.
Probably like there next Thursday or something.
We're going to Ibiza, by the way. It'll be the Picks podcast.
That'd
out
be a
there.
Mess.
Yeah, jump on it. It's well worth it.
Yeah.
Bellator.
Hang on. Patreon.com/fullreptile.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll put all of those details in the description below. That's what we're doing it. Subscribe below.
That's the thumbnail for the episode. You pointing at your shaving balls.
Shave your balls.
Manscaped. Okay.
Bellator.
Yeah. Let's talk about that first.
Well, he said he was going to do it.
Yeah.
And he did do it.
Yeah.
And he won himself $1 million.
It was beautiful.
Fair play.
It was such a slick performance.
Great timing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Great timing on the kick.
And he'd said in the build-up to it that he was going to do it with the body kick.
Yeah.
He threw the body kick and it got blocked.
Beautiful.
Set it up perfectly for the head kick next time around.
So my question to you is, that's a tough transition across if you come into the UFC. So where does AJ fit? Let's start at the bottom of those rankings. Where does AJ sit with Shane Burgos?
Okay.
Evloev, can he be? Is he on the same level as Chikadze? That's a tough group
of
people.
It's a very tough division. I mean, I could see him competitive with any of them, though. To be honest, there are going to be some people that he'd struggle with more than others. I mean, anybody in the world, regardless of weight class, would struggle with the pace that Max Holloway sets.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that. The toughness of Chan Sung Jun, you know, you'd have to do something significant to put him away. Rodriguez is a wild card. You can always pull something out of his pocket, so you've always got to be measured with him. Ortega, as we've seen in his fight against Zombie, you know, excellent boxing, real measured, great guillotines. I mean, it's a problematic division. And obviously, you know, Volkanovski is the champion.
I was just trying to think to myself, well, would he even get past Burgos and Evloev? Do you know what I mean? They're 13 and 14 in that division. That's how strong that division is.
But then, you could take Evloev and put him up in the top five right now.
He'd probably hang anyway, wouldn't he?
Yeah. It's such a deep division.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say he's competitive with any of those guys in that division, really. I think, obviously, you know, he struggles with the higher volume guys, the likes of Max Holloway. Someone's got a good takedown. You know, I mean, you know, Brian Ortega, Max Holloway, I think would be the most problematic for him.
Yeah.
Really?
Well, Bellator are up for it, aren't they? But I can't imagine that US...
No chance
in it. No way.
No chance. They learned that lesson when they took Chuck over to Pride to fight Rampage. and he got thrown around.
Never again. No. Anyway, congratulations to AJ McKee.
Yeah, he looks awesome. There were some really good fights on the card. Obviously, Mads Burnell won an awesome decision over Emmanuel Sanchez. What were the other ones I was talking about? Oh, Usman Nurmagomedov.
Right.
That was a really knee to the midsection.
Yeah.
And that's it. Yamauchi. Yeah, Goichi Yamauchi.
Nice.
Took... Gonzalez, well remembered, Jamie. I've got so much swimming around in my head at the moment. Yeah, he pinged Gonzalez and handed him his first loss.
Right.
Yeah, he was very good. It was a good card. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's good. And again, it's just nice being able to watch it on iPlayer, isn't it?
For sure.
Very cool. The only thing, I wasn't mad about this fight night. The only thing I thought was a point of interest we could talk about is the sort of insight that, you've confused me on her name now, Cheyenne Bays, as the insight that she bought when she won the performance of the night. It just sort of showed you how to, you know, if the sport isn't tough enough, actually financing being an athlete in this sport is so difficult. You know, she's going in, it's not her first fight, you know, she's been around a little while, and she's in the negative coming into that fight. So even just in general life, if you're in your overdraft, that's a stressful situation. Now you're laying in weight cuts and actual performance on top of it, and worrying about, you know, the purse that she's going to get paid, aside from the bonus, like, is that actually going to cover everything? Or am I just back to, I'm just back to square one, and now I have to do that whole process again, back in debt, you know, diet myself down, try and perform just to get, you know, just on the hope that you get that big performance and suddenly everything goes right. And, you know,
it's rough, but you know, the way it seems to be, and now it was weird because I was in, I was tidying out my office the other day and I found a couple of checks, like bonus checks that I got from the UFC.
Didn't bother cashing them.
they were the like the stubs, the receipts from them. And like, I remember looking at them and thinking to myself, like, I remember how I felt when I received that, you know, and I remember where I was at and, you know, financially when I received that. And like my first fight, I was 3-3, right? I fought co-main event at the O2 Arena for 5-5 against Roy Markham.
It's outrageous.
And I think I got a $10,000 bonus. So that doubled what I made that night. But what I made that night, purse and win bonus, didn't cover training camp.
No.
I mean, you get through more money than you think with treatments and with travel and with, you know, if you're traveling to, you know, to train and accommodation and that kind of stuff. And
you just don't need that in this sport.
Well, the point I was going to make is that then all of a sudden that bonus money becomes the golden carrot, and it becomes the all-wielding power that the UFC have got over these fighters, because it's like, you know, they just dangle that carrot over the octagon for every single fight.
It's getting bigger as well, isn't it? They keep bumping that up,
but then, you know, people are still signing contracts for...
And the mad thing is, it's discretionary. So it's just like, oh, I like that fight. Mm. You can have it. Do you know what I mean? Which is great. And I mean, I know they use it as a... You know, they use it as a tool, so they do have to give it when it's due to be given. Otherwise, the tool's not going to work. Mm. But yeah, I mean, we've spoken about before how sort of in team sports, you go through the academy and you've got no money in the academies and stuff, and then you break through to the first team, and then you're at the bottom end of the first team, and you maybe get a couple of appearances, and when you get an appearance, you get a performance bonus in a sense. And then, you know, you keep working until you're a regular first team player, and now you're sort of making some decent money. Mm. But I mean, the minimums in team sports is still higher than what the minimums in this sport is.
Yeah.
And this, you know, the sport, the complexity and difficulty and risk in this sport, I think, deserves more.
Agreed.
You know,
yeah.
As a baseline, it's a bit like universal income, right?
Yeah.
There should be some kind of decent, livable universal income for these guys that are doing something that 99.9% of people in the world can't do.
Yeah.
That's what you're paying them for.
The thing is as well, you know, if you're the UFC, if you're the sports leader, you know, you've got to think about where you're going to be in, you know, 25, 50 years, 100 years. You know, some of these like leagues have been around for a long, long time. And, you know, they have changed little bits over the years. But, like, if the UFC wants to stay, the prominent force in MMA... You don't want people retiring or, you know, like waiting out their contracts and then turning on the UFC pissed off like a lot of fighters are. Like, there was a thing I was watching today that Bloomberg put up about the class action lawsuit, and it goes through, like, they interview Kyle Kingsbury and Nate Quarry and Kung Lee, and, you know, there's a whole bunch of people on there that are talking about, this is what happened, this is how
someone
shit
in the US
it was.
Someone in the UFC office just twitched when you said lawsuit.
But, you know, it's coming. And, you know, the first thing that most likely is going to happen is the Ali Act will transition over to MMA as well, which will then, you know, it will change the business practices of the UFC because they won't be able to keep people locked in a contract, which means that, you know, GSP might be able to cross over and fight, you know, who was it, De La Hoya was going to fight?
Yeah.
You know, that might be able to happen. Or, you know, AJ McKee will be able to wait out his contract for 12 months and then sign with the UFC or, you know, whatever. But it gives the fighters more freedom because they can't be bound into contracts.
Mm.
And then with the class action lawsuit, that's all about how much money was made over the period of time, you know, when the UFC were paying fighters 3 and 3.
Yeah.
And what were they making? Silly, silly money.
I mean, yeah, you know. They're floated now, aren't they? So they're accountable to their board and their shareholders and what have you.
The thing that doesn't make sense, though, right, is the other thing as well is so first of all, you don't want fighters retiring and having a sour taste in their mouth from the UFC. Second of all, you don't want fighters retiring and then having to go and get regular jobs because they don't have any cash in the bank.
Yeah.
Like Brian Kelleher tweeted the other day about he needs a YouTuber because he doesn't want to get a job at Walmart. Like, you want Brian Kelleher to open a gym. Cheyenne Bays, like, you want her to be able to invest her time fully in MMA so she can get as good as she can, so that raises the bar, raises the standard. Like, you know, that's the thing.
It's
like,
got to be a great... It's got, even as the mega corporation that is the UFC, that is cutthroat capitalist, my perception at least is cutthroat capitalist. I'll do whatever I need to do to, you know, win and be at the top. There's got to be a greater good, surely.
You would think, but that's
for the sport.
Corporations are the get around for the greater good, aren't they?
Yeah.
You know? I'll send you this I'll send you this video. I'll just try and find it now. It's Bloomberg Quick Take.
Yeah.
427,000 views. It's an interesting video. It's about 15 minutes long.
I know there's some heat around that lawsuit, like it is.
Yeah.
It's the unsaid thing within the organisation, I think.
It's coming up. I mean, there are 1,200 fighters, 1,200 UFC fighters involved in it automatically, 1,214 to be exact, unless they actually opt out of it, which I'm sure most fighters wouldn't. But, you know, even, like, I'm not bothered if no money comes of it at all.
Yeah.
I just want the culture to change.
Yeah.
Because, like, the guys that we're bringing through now, I don't want them to be signing contracts for 10 and 10 and that kind of stuff when they're making the organization they're fighting for six figures or more.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see what comes of it. Just as we were talking, something from Clubhouse just popped up. Did you host that one thing with Clubhouse?
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, it was good.
Renan Derrida joined us for a bit as well.
Nice.
I had a good chat with
him. I didn't catch it this time. I caught the last one. I didn't catch this one.
No, it was good. It was good. Yeah. And that Samai Prajan Chai fight in the main event, just, they're both so slick, so skilled.
Yeah.
Really, really good fight. And then City Chai against Tawan Chai has just been announced as well. I think we're going to do some stuff for that on the channel.
Yeah. Wicked.
Really good stuff. Anything you want to talk about on the UFC, aside from Cheyenne Bays being poor, aside from that $50,000 bonus, which, you know, you go, what, 35% tax, and then, you know...
Yeah, what do you actually take home from that?
No,
pay your overdraft off and a bit more. Yeah. Maybe take everyone for lunch. Be about it, innit?
And Nando's.
It's reality, innit?
Yeah.
Not particularly anything you want to talk about?
No. Jared Gooden looked good. Jared Gooden looked good. Melsic looked good. The Gritsmacher Rafa Garcia fight was just a bloodbath, as we expected. Jinju Frey Ashley Yoda, what to say, the point of difference would be is the strength of physicality, and Ashley Yoda just didn't look strong enough or fast enough.
No.
She had a couple of good sprints in it, but Jinju Frey generally looked stronger. I felt bad for Ryan Benoit. I thought he had a good performance. It was a rough one. He knocked him down in the first, or caught him and hurt him. But then the calf kick started to land after that and just sapped his energy. And then Phil Rowe looked really good against the Ryan Kose. And Phil Rowe's talking to V in a couple of hours.
Nice.
So there'll be a, there'll be a bit going on.
That's cool. So we'll get that up in...
Yeah. And Sean Strickland's style is fucking ugly. And I don't care. I don't care the shit I got for it. It's an ugly style.
Yeah.
But, you know, it works. It's like being waterboarded, you know? It's like...
He'll make you talk
just,
in the end.
Yeah, he just walks you down and just jabs your face off.
He's tough. Like, he's a tough dude, isn't
tough,
he?
Tough,
like,
durable. A little bit crazy, I think.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
But Uriah, he breaks mentally so quickly.
He's leaning in on that crazy in the press conferences and stuff
a little bit.
Yeah,
yeah.
Not sure how
he's a bit
calculated it is or
not. Yeah, we need to keep an eye on him. He's the kind of person that would blow up a hospital or something. A bit of a lunatic. Okay.
Right.
265.
Yeah. It's right down the bottom. Johnny Munoz and Jamie Simmons,
yes.
Right?
Yes. Hang on, let me pull it up on. Okay, go on.
He was so Johnny Munoz was undefeated coming into the UFC.
Yeah.
And then dropped his first fight for the UFC. But having said that, Jamie Simmons came in and got given Giga on his first first one
and got
first crack
bad.
At it, and then got Chikadze.
Yeah.
Bad, didn't he?
Yeah.
But bad. They're both in a bit of a tough spot. It's a good, you know, when two people in a tough spot come together, it's a good chance for one of them to sort of right the ship, isn't it?
Yeah.
And get things going again.
Yeah. I think the UFC expectation is that Johnny Munoz wins this.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he's a strong grappler. He's probably got the height and reach advantage slightly. I know that
he was good against Nate Maness.
Yeah.
And I reckon in that first round,
but
he was in super dominant position, was beating on him, and another 20 seconds of that might have been, you know, that could have been a win.
Mm-hmm.
Now I know he sort of dropped off the cliff a bit, and Nate turned that fight quite significantly, didn't he?
But Johnny couldn't get the fight to the floor after that, could he?
No, but he did great in round one.
There was a transition that he looked really strong holding top position. It was like a Kimura. He took his back and then he was in mount and then he had like 30 seconds at the end of the fight.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just think,
I felt like there was enough in that first round where like, okay, he's got some game here. He can, you know, he's got a flow that can end up in a finish.
Mm.
I see that sort of working. There's not much to sort of say about Simmons really, other than I thought he got caught in the headlights with Giga. He's a bit like, oh shit, there's a lot going on here, and just couldn't really get off, and was just a bit like, I'm waiting here to get.
I mean, it was a jumping competition.
Yeah.
If you look at the dates of it as well, so his fight before he lost to Giga, he was on a 3-fight win streak. Mm. He stopped two guys in the first round with punches. And one guy in the second round with a rear naked choke. But he's got what, 5-2, 20-12, and 16-11 are the guys that he's fighting. Yeah. And I mean, Giga's just such a step up. I mean, he's headlining next against Barbosa.
Yeah, that's how fast things have developed.
Was it a short notice fight? Did Giga have somebody else lined up and they pull out? Let's have a quick look.
Giga seemed keen for anyone.
No, he didn't.
No.
No. Maybe they just needed a couple of highlight reels for him.
Well, you know, you don't know the story behind,
he was a minus 900 favorite going into that one. It was like the bookies had it as a mismatch. I don't think nearly as much of a mismatch. I mean, they've got about the same amount of experience. I just think Johnny's more familiar with winning, and I think the expectation on the UFC part is that he's probably going to come in and you know, probably take him down and beat him up.
Yeah, I took Johnny over, thinking Johnny overall probably has a bit more game.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, cool.
Pull up UFC stats. Let me just so. Dun 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 dun. So which one are you going, Johnny?
Yeah,
Johnny Munoz.
Johnny Munoz.
Okay.
Johnny Munoz Jr.
Victoria Leonardo against Melissa Gatto.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we've talked about Leonardo before.
Yeah.
She came through the contender series, didn't she? She just has a mixed run, doesn't she? She's mm-hmm. sort of up and down, struggles to string stuff together. And she's lost twice to Miranda Maverick.
Yeah.
And she's a bit... that's when we spoke about her, against Firo.
Uh-huh.
Those two four, and she, it was just ended up being a bit of a mismatch, didn't it? And she got the shit beat out of her a little bit. She finished with a head kick.
Yeah.
Finishing Firo looked really good, didn't she?
Yeah.
We were impressed with her.
This is much more of an evenly matched fight.
Yeah.
I'd say Melissa Gatto's got an odd record. She's
very
odd. She's 6-0-2,
and she's 24.
Yeah,
but she hasn't fought since 2018.
Yeah,
so that's a big I don't know what she's doing. I don't know what she's doing. Is she just in the gym? Like, that's at that age and that level of development, sort of 3 years of just hammering it in the gym, she could come out a completely different fighter, couldn't she?
Yeah, she could. Or she might have just disappeared entirely.
She might be on the piss for 3 years. Who knows?
I mean, I did watch her last fight, and it was, I mean, she just held top position and just smashed her up.
She got four of her six wins are from subs, so she's got some, she's got a submission game.
Yeah. She's had a lot of cancelled bouts as well.
Yeah.
Was that six cancelled bouts? Jeez. Yeah, I mean, I kind of don't have an opinion on this, really. I mean, I think Victoria Leonardo, she's a good fighter. I think she proved that in Invicta. Mm. You know, she had good performances in Invicta. You know, she's physically very strong. She's got a good kicking game. I think has she got a Taekwondo background?
Yeah.
But, you know, there are certain ranges where she did look uncomfortable on the feet. Yeah. You know,
she looks strong, but she doesn't
she does.
She doesn't look powerful. She doesn't look bouncy or elastic. She's just like solid and strong.
Mm-hmm.
She's which when you said Taekwondo, I was like, oh shit, okay. Then you know, people from Taekwondo generally are quite elastic, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
But she seemed almost flat-footed and a bit sort of ploddy when she fought Ferreira.
A little bit. Yeah, I'm gonna coin toss it and go Victoria Leonardo. I just think she's got good experience at Invicta level competition. You know, she's had a couple of rough ones she's had one rough one in the UFC against Manon Farrow, who was on fire.
Yeah, yeah, very good, very good. I'm gonna go Gatto because she's just been in the gym.
She's been hammering it for three years.
She's not left. She's sleeping there.
Got a split pick.
Yeah,
you create more. She's
living,
the Raptors
living and breathing it.
They have to do two stamps now. Okay, next one. Miles Johns against Anderson Dos Santos.
There we go.
I was watching one of Dos Santos's fights earlier today, and Bisping in the commentary's like, his name's like a Brazilian name generator.
What? Add three names together and see what comes up.
It's just like there's like so many Andersons and so many Dos Santos fight. It's like Smith and Brown from the UK, you know.
He's fought some good people outside of the UFC. Ricky Simon and Saeed Nurmagomedov.
Yep.
He's got a lot of experience, but he's 36 now. I think he's getting on a little bit.
Is he 36?
I think so.
Yeah, he is. 85.
Yeah. He's getting on a bit.
Yeah. He looked good against Martin Day, but I felt like Martin Day kind of jumped into that guillotine.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It was like, I mean, Martin Day's, he was a fourth degree black belt, Martin Day is, in Taekwondo. So like, at range, his kicking game is on point. But he got closed down, he got taken down, and then he was able to reverse the position and then went to take him down in the scramble, which I just don't think he wanted to do.
Yeah, why?
And he was in the guillotine for a while without really doing anything to fight it. And it was an arming guillotine as well. Dos Santos just kind of adjusted and tweaked it a bit more and got the tap. It was, you know, he had a good fight against Andre Ewell, but he seemed to struggle with the range and with the fact that he's southpaw, you know? Like Ewell's kind of awkward and he covers distance really quickly and he's kind of got a odd herky-jerky kind of rhythm to him and, you know, height and reach advantage plus southpaw. But he was able to get Ewell down in the third round as well, you know?
We just got Dos Santos at sort of 36, but experience, and then you got Miles John at 11-1 and sort of in his prime. I think he's 27. Yeah. He's by the time you're at 11-1 and you're at 27, things are starting to come together a little bit, aren't they?
27. I mean, that the loss to Batista, the problem is he's quite predictable in the fact that he backs up quite straight. And then when you put him under pressure against the fence, he generally never moves left or right. He generally level changes.
Okay.
And he does it well sometimes. Like if you think back to the Navidad fight, he was level changed onto that lead leg and snatching it and taking him down. But then, you know, finished with the uppercut in the third round. But because he was able to alleviate pressure, whereas Batista didn't allow him to do that.
That was nice, that uppercut out of the clinch, wasn't it? Single necktie, let it go, and then
put him in a really awkward position when he landed as well, didn't it?
It pretty much knocked him off his feet, I think.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
that nice recoil thing where you're like a fetal position in the air just for a split second.
Yeah. I'll tell you what else as well. He looks like, Miles Johns looks like what Ilia Laifi would look like if he was a welterweight.
Right.
Like in that last fight against Natividad, like he just looks like a little kind of shrunk down, compact, lean Laifi.
Nice.
Like he looks like he'd pack a punch if he landed. But the main issue is that backing up straight and level changing down.
Yeah.
Because De Santos does like to pressure. He does have good striking and a lot of experience, so he's not going to be afraid pushing him around a bit. Miles Jones doesn't bring the same kind of problems that Andre Ewell does.
Right.
You know, he's not sounds like or tall.
Sounds like you're meandering towards Dos Santos.
I'm just kind of throwing things on the table for you to pick. Which way were you leaning before us?
Just Miles Jones. I just thought this is his test, isn't it? Like this is the lower to mid tier gatekeeper. He needs to get past this if he's going to move on up through the ranks and towards the rankings.
Yeah.
So it's on him. Anderson Dos Santos is not. It's highly unlikely to now go on a streak and be challenging at 37, 38, 39 for belts and stuff.
Probably not.
So this is on. It's on Miles Jones, isn't it?
Mm.
Go beat the end of level boss.
Yeah.
And then move up into that next sort of echelon.
Yeah. I mean, he'd be 12-1 then. You know, yeah. He'd be an it's exciting good, prospect right? with
27,
a couple of wins.
12-1.
Yeah. Especially with a couple of knockouts, but at the same time, if he does get pressured back up against the fence and he does shoot off the fence out of reaction, Dos Santos, he's got a good guillotine.
Right.
You know, especially if he's got Miles Jones rocked and he backs up level changes and
what?
Just throw that out there. Miles Jones should win. You know, he's the younger, fresher fighter with less wear and tear, and you know, I would say he's probably got the speed advantage as well, but Dos Santos.
Yeah, you're battling with this, aren't
I'm
you?
All over the place.
All right.
Which way are you going?
I'm going Miles Jones, but Jones. Yeah, I can see what you're saying.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll go Dos Santos then, just to create more work for the Raptors.
Yeah, right. We need two different coloured stamps, please. But don't tell who's who.
I'll have gold because mine's correct. Right. Okay, I've got Manel Kapp against Ode Osborne next.
Right, good to see Manel Kapp back because we liked him. I think this is the third time probably he's come up.
Yeah.
And he came over from Rising where he was just banging heads left, right and centre, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And then came in and got given Pantoja as your first fight in.
Yeah.
But I remember last time we spoke about it that it was probably because of his hype, right? Uh-huh. Like they are either paying him a fair bit
exactly.
of money.
Someone that's looking good in a different organisation.
Yeah.
That's, you know, they need to bring
prove.
Him over. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Here you go. Here's some cash. Come over. You can have Pantoja, by the way, as your first fight.
Yeah.
Oh, sweet. And then he lost a close split in his second, so he's 0-2 in the UFC.
Yeah.
Which is it's kind of rough. But Ode Osborne's solid, but he's not quite, he's definitely not that Pantoja level, is he?
No,
he's not. This is someone he can come in. And it's not going to be a clear walkover, but he can win this.
Mm-hmm.
Like if he performs how we saw him performing Rising, he could win this fight
and
be good. I think he should be in the UFC. There seems to be enough about him where, you know, he's in the right place. He's very super skilled, super athletic. He's just a good solid fighter. And we'll see how this plays out.
I'd expect this one to be a striking exchange unless Manel Kapp catches him and gets a bit overzealous and runs into his guard. There's some triangles on Ode Osborne's record, and that armbar on the Contender Series was super slick. I mean, it was a very quick snap the armbar on. Plus, outside of the UFC, he's got he's got a couple of three triangles, rear naked chokes. Like, that's the way that Manel Kapp loses this, is that desperation to get my first UFC win.
Yeah.
You know, my expectations of myself are very high.
Mm.
That last one was a split decision. I'm not going to let that happen.
Yeah.
Catches him, drops him, runs into ground and pound, and then finds himself in a triangle.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Just to throw an alternative out there.
I think Manel Kapp should win this win.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I think Ode Osborne's good. And I think, you know, losing to Manel Kapp's not really going to slow him down, but I would like to see Manel Kapp stay on the roster because, you know, like you said, he does belong in the UFC, but Pantoja,
if you're getting paid a shitload of money and then you go 0-3, I know you don't get a P45 over in America, true. But you're in a bit of trouble, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah. So which way are you going? You go an L cap?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think so.
Okay. This is a good one. The return of Karolina Kowalkiewicz taking on Jessica Penne.
I didn't realise what a bad streak Karolina was on. She's in a real tough spot. She's lost four in a row. This is a fifth one. I mean, Jessica Penn is, you know, she's not going to be a walkover. It's still going to be, this is going to be a tough fight.
Yeah.
I mean, look, Karolina, she's lost a lot of decisions, hasn't she? It's not like she's just getting completely outclassed. She's lost three decisions, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then did she get slept by Andrade?
Yeah, but a lot of people, a lot of people have. Yeah, she got caught in an exchange early on in that one. At one point, she was right up at the top of the division.
Yeah.
Contending for, she fought Joanna for the belt at 205. Then her next fight was against Claudia Gadea, which is one of the toughest fights in the division. Picked up two wins, Jodi Escobel and Felice Herrig. But then Andrade knocked her out. She lost a decision to Waterson, decision to Grasso, and then a decision to Yan Xiaonan. And I think, if I remember right, the one against Yan Xiaonan was when she had her orbital bone fractured.
Right.
And she couldn't see properly in the fight. Okay. So she was covering one of her eyes with her hand so she could see one of her opponent to know where to hit. I mean, she's tough.
Yeah,
she's got to keep this in striking range, though. Like, if you look what Joanna did to Jessica Penne, like, she just buzzsawed her. She hit her with elbows, she hit with punches, kicks, and just overwhelmed her. And Jessica Penne's a good black belt. She doesn't really want to be tangling up with her on the floor. You know, that's the tipping point.
She's been away for a little while.
Who? Kowalkiewicz?
No, Penne.
Oh, they both have. I think Penne was a failed drug test, though. Kowalkiewicz, she effectively retired after her last fight against Yan Xiaonan. I think she's got married.
So Penne came back and beat Godinez, didn't she?
But
it was a decision, and I watched it a couple of days ago. And I felt like she had the chance to push in that fight to get that to decisively win that.
Yeah, but she was coming off three losses as well. Pressure and time out, and it was 2017. April of 2017 to April of 2021 was the time that Penne had out, whereas Kowalkiewicz, her last fight was 2020, so she's not been out for ages. It was February 2020, and she'd no doubt been training in that time. I just think she was kind of a bit burnt out. She had tough opponents, and all of her fights were always a high pace, loads of striking.
Yeah, so Penne got popped for stenozanol, but contested it. Stenozanol. Steroids. But it was 20 months. Ugh. Yeah, she protested and contested it as a contaminated supplement, but she's still got 20 months. That explains the gap.
Mm.
Yeah, I got you.
Okay.
Which
way are you going?
I think, Jessica should probably win it if she can get her hands on her. It's just been so long since Karolina's put a winning performance together, isn't it?
It is. But
I reckon, could beat her up though, couldn't she?
She could.
If she just keeps that. If she gets tied up on court, I think it could be a long night for Karolina. But
I think going off how Misha Tate looked recently in her comeback, I think Karolina's not coming back unless she feels like she's ready to. And she's looking at this division and thinking, I can still be a contender here. I think Karolina's probably gonna win a decision, beat her up, stuff her takedowns.
Yeah. Like at that Alexa Grasso fight, like they stood and banged for a little bit in that, didn't they? Like she's got that in her, she's got that game.
Yeah. That's why she got knocked out by Jessica Andrade.
Because she was a bit too game to play with that fire.
But I think her aggression and her volume, maybe not her power necessarily, but even Joanna's power wasn't enough to put Penne down. But she opened up with an elbow. and then just flurried against the fence till the referee stepped in.
Yeah, okay.
Like, I can see Carolina coming back with a point to prove. Mm. Like, Penne's got a win. You know, she came back after all that time. Yeah, off. She right. got a
She's
win.
She's, what, 36, 37, I think.
Is she?
I think so. Let me have a quick look. Where is she?
Yeah, 38. Spring chicken.
Yeah.
Spring chicken.
It's compared to you. Yeah, we'll go with that.
You're what? Older than me.
Well, allegedly, but you know.
No, not allegedly.
You play on that way too much.
We could play a previous podcast back where you say you're 3 days older than me. It's a fucking long 3 days. Talking of a long three days. So you're going Penne, are you?
I'm going to, yeah. Mainly because I don't want you to talk me out of it. But I can see your point with Carolyn. I can see your point. And I can definitely see how she could put that in place to beat Jessica, but. Yeah, we'll see.
I think Caroline is going to do it.
Yeah.
Anyway, Ed Herman against Alonzo Menafield.
Funny, man. I saw Ed Herman's name. I was like, come on, it feels like he's been around for decades. Turns out he has actually been around for decades.
Decades.
Tough in 2006, Ed Herman was on.
Mate, so I remember, so when I first started to go over and train in the US, where did I go first? I went to American Top Team first with Paul Daly. And then the next time I went out there, I did a couple of weeks at ATT and then flew over to Oregon to Team Quest. And Ed Herman was teaching at least a class a day.
Yeah.
And I did all of the classes for a month. So I was doing four classes plus the pro training in like the early afternoon. And Ed Herman and I got on like a house on fire.
Oh, really?
He was a maniac back then.
Yeah.
And I would have never have thought that his style and the way that he fought would have lasted for so long. I mean...
Like, normally maniacs just go out in a blaze of glory, don't they?
I mean, look at, what's his name? Chris Lieben. Like, yeah. Like a head like exactly a warm basketball now, you know what I mean?
Exactly what I was thinking about.
Like, Ed Herman's a beast.
He's just like a diesel engine, isn't he? Like, he's not, you know...
like a fucking Frankenstein.
You can't drive him over 200 miles an hour, but, you know, if you need something pulling and you need to grind something out, Ed's your man.
Yeah. And he's been around for a long time as well. He's got good wins.
Like when you look on his topology, he's like a good three. He's a good three scroll to get down the bottom of it.
Is that Ed Herman? Believe it or not, has got a win over Glover Teixeira.
Wow.
I'm literally just looking back through his old record now. He's got a win over Brian Ebersole back in 2004. He's got a win over Glover Teixeira. Beat Nick Thompson. Beat Dave Manet. They're good fights. And then he was into the Ultimate Fighter. So I must have trained with him. Yeah, I did. I trained with him just before the Ultimate Fighter when he was preparing for Nick Thompson.
Right.
Good fighter, though. Tough dude. Durable.
Amazing. He's
heavy
just
hitting.
Just amazing he's around.
Right.
So how old is he?
I mean, if you're getting into 40. A bar fight.
Oh, yeah.
If you're getting into
he's
a bar
made
fight.
For it,
he's made for bar made fighting. For it. He's, I mean, you know, him and Chris Lieben. Edward Benson Herman.
So,
go on, Menafield.
Yeah, so Menafield is 7 years younger. He's 10-2. He's in a pretty good spot. Mm-hmm. He's a henchman for sure.
Hench.
Absolutely hench. He's got some power.
Yep.
The thing is, all I can see is him backing away from OSP and backing away from OSP and backing away and then getting bap and then just getting slept by him.
Yeah.
But I don't think he's going to have that problem with Ed, right? That's not the way this will play out.
Well, I think if this ends in the first round, Menafield's either caught him clean and knocked him out, or he's managed to put him in a position where he can tap, and it'll be something compressive. You know, it'll be something like a guillotine up against the fence. I mean, like that last one against Sharan, the Von Flew choke.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like physiology played a big part in that. The fact that he's got
the Von
Squeeze
choke,
nearly popped his head like a grape, like some off Game of Thrones. But if he can't do that against Ed Herman, if Ed Herman's tough and durable, takes a shot, he looks a bit rocked in the first round, but goes back to his stall at the end of the second round, his corner man gives him a slap and he's like, Ed, round two. And he's like, okay, now's when I switch on.
Yeah.
And then Menafield's like exhausted up against the fence with Ed Herman just boom.
He's got one of them bodies in it that you just know you get the power, but you don't get very much of it.
You don't get much of it.
So how smart are you with that when you use it? Yeah.
When does it go?
Nos.
And if it goes first round, like a lot of his fights,
he's in
Paul
a bit of
Craig,
trouble.
Moreira.
And that's Ed Herman, right? If you've blown your load, And he's still in the fight. He's going to wear on you, and he's probably not going to take that sub. He's going to beat your ass.
Yep. You're going to feel like a punch bag in a conditioning session on the ground. Just hammer fists and just, and we might not even knock him out, but it'll be enough to beat him up into a fetal position.
Yeah, right. So we're sort of saying many field in one or maybe halfway through the second, but anything past that is probably swings to Herman's side.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, logic would say Menafield's going to catch him and knock him out because Ed Herman is there to be hit. You know, he's got 14 losses on his record because he's a dice roller. But on the flip side, that toughness and experience does pay off. I'm going a little bit with my heart, and I'm going to say Ed Herman's going to stop him late second, early third. I think Menafield might give everything he's got in the first round, and Frankenstein's still
still coming. All right, I'll go with that. Ed Herman.
Okay. One for Ed. Short fuse. It's a long fucking fuse, mate. It's been burning for about 25 years now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Here we go.
Draco Rodriguez.
No, that's all right. It's fine. It's not just not the one I was thinking
about. He's got the wrong notes.
No, we're all right. We're in a funny order. Fucking hell. Toughology changed the mind.
Draco Rodriguez against Vince Morales.
So Draco got slipped by Ayman Zahabi, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
But there was
Ayman Zahabi's a good fighter.
It was a good performance by him as well that night, wasn't it? And then Vince has got a decision win over Zahabi.
Yes, he has.
I swear, like, matchmakers are like, oh, that'll do.
Yeah.
Two common opponents. Sure. They're common opponent, that'll do.
But you find there people are in cycles, and like, they get the same opponents and they switch around places. It's a bit musical chairs. I don't necessarily know that one Ayman Zahabi is the same as the other Ayman Zahabi, though. Like, he seems to be very up and down in his performances for me. Like, even the fights that he wins and he looks good, sometimes it's not him. When he's on fire, when he's on point, like, I've seen this guy in the gym grappling with some of the best at TriStar, and he's a very, very slick fighter.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think he's not quite as present as he needs to be.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, he's lost two fights before the win over Draco. I don't know. He just didn't seem himself in those fights, especially after that spinning elbow from Ramos.
Oh, fractured his jaw, didn't he?
Yeah. I think sometimes it shakes a fighter.
It's not just a physiological recovery, is it? Stuff like that. There's a big mental weight to shift.
Definitely.
I mean, Morales is struggling a bit since the Contender Series, isn't he? I think he's dropped to 9-5 since he's
had some tough ones as well. Yeah. I mean, they got Song Yadong, you got Chris Gutierrez, Benito Lopez.
Stopped him with low kicks?
Gutierrez stopped him with low kicks.
Calf kicks, as in it shut down or just battered his leg until it stopped working.
I think it was a mixture. I think it was a bit of both.
Right.
I'd have to watch it back, though. I don't remember exactly.
I don't know.
It's a bit of a,
I couldn't really, you know, I don't know a massive amount about either of them, but...
I mean, the thing with Rodriguez is, I mean, he's good, he's got skills, but he looks a little bit rough around the edges, a bit unpolished. You know, I mean, he's still young in his career. What is he, 9 fights in? When the opportunity's there, he's got techniques to throw at it. But I don't know if he's very good at kind of bringing the victory to himself. And I think Vince Morales, even though he's not got much more experience, the level of experience he's got is higher against the likes of Yadong and Ayman Zahabi and the like. But then the explosiveness of Rodriguez could be a leveler. He reminds me of Morgan Charrier.
Right.
He looks a lot like Morgan Charrier. Fights like him as well. Like a little bit too much power for him to control.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like you get your car, you set up with your car wrong and you got all this horsepower and no traction and suddenly you're spinning off the road.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I don't know. Morales on leveled experience.
Yes. Yeah, I think Morales. But I think he might get a bit beat up in the first round in the process.
Right.
This next fight.
This is what I thought we were going to
We've got two back-to-back here.
Yeah,
we've
we
got
do.
Two back-to-back.
Yeah, all about it.
I mean,
this is a good card, man.
It is
man.
A good
like,
card, yeah.
The last card was relatively average, weren't it? But they've come back with a banger.
This is a good one. Fiziev against Bobby Green.
Yeah. Bobby's had a funny career, man. He's been on.
I cornered against him once, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, he fought a guy called Toby Greer. He was good. Toby was good, but he just fucking had a weird night.
Yeah.
That was early, though, that was. I was on TFA.
Man, he's had like a streak of losses, a few cancelled fights, and then he grabbed three really solid wins in 2020, didn't he? Yeah. Came back with a bit of a vengeance.
He's a bit of a street fighter, isn't he? He's a bit of a more improved version of Crazy Horse, Charles.
Yeah,
Bennett,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
Like good wrestling, athletic, powerful when he lands, but he's a little bit loose and a little bit kind of fights without a plan.
Yeah. That's a bad
idea. You can't
idea.
Do that against physio.
That's a bad idea, man. I mean, this is the next generation coming through. I see Fiziev in that Gillespie, Sarukin, Riddell, Makachev crew that's like, all right, we're buying our time a little bit, but we're coming, motherfuckers. You know, there's a little bit of a change in the guard. Like, I know Makachev's up in the top five already, but those other guys, they're coming.
Mm.
They're coming. That's going to be, you know, that's going to be the top five in the next 1 to 3 years, isn't it?
Definitely. Fiziev striking is up there in the top 1% in all of combat sports. He's so slick.
The knockout on Moyes is just...
Moikano.
Moikano, yeah.
I remember because I called his UFC debut against Mustafayev, and I remember the hype coming into that fight. I remember how excited everybody was, including people that were his teammates from Tiger Muay Thai and coaches. They were like, he's good.
Watch this.
Wait till you see Fiziev.
Yeah.
Wait till you see this guy. I think he almost kind of came in a little bit like, yeah, wait to see what I can do. And then he got caught with a spinning back kick.
Yeah.
It was just, you know, it was just one of those things. I think if that fight played out 3 or 4 times, I think Fiziev, you know, gets the better of him. But it was a great shot by Mustafayev.
His gatekeeper, you know, isn't it?
Yeah.
Bobby Green is his gatekeeper.
That's a great way to put it.
I win this and now I'm rolling.
Yeah.
Now I'm rolling up with Gillespie and Sarukian and the boys that are on the takeover.
I think they kind of rolled a dice a bit with the Moikano matchup.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, obviously Moikano would be a value to the top of this division because he's got a name and he's respected as, you know, as a contender already from featherweight. But then, you know, Fiziev, like, he made a point of that fight. I mean, first round knockout, powerful left hook.
Yeah.
He's got that win over Gukasey, a unanimous decision. I think Bobby Green's going to test him because he's a bit wild and a bit unpredictable, and he's got good wrestling as well. So I don't think Fiziev's going to be able to get this fight to the ground with ease. I think he's going to have to work hard for it.
Yeah.
And I think Bobby Green's got a good hustle all the way through the fight, a good pace. But I think ultimately Fiziev's going to just chop him down.
I think so.
It's what makes the most sense. And it's going to be beautiful to watch as well. Yeah. It'd be very efficient.
Yeah.
It'd be very, very efficient. With like that whipping low kick. It's a bit like old Thiago Alves, the way he used to throw his low kicks.
Love it.
Yeah.
Love it. Yeah, I've definitely got Fiziev, yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
This next one is a barn burner as well.
Isn't it?
And their records are almost exactly the same. So Song Yadong against Casey Kenny. 16-5-1 against 16-3-1. Casey Kenny's a maniac.
Yeah,
Song
this
Yadong
is critical
is a
for Song Yadong.
Yeah, it is.
Because there was a lot of heat around him, wasn't there? There was like 5 or 6 different people were talking about him. He's the next thing. He's alpha male. He's a super athlete. And now he's under the tutorial of the guys at Alpha Male.
Yeah.
I
mean, he had that majority draw against Cody Stamann. Then that fight against Marlon Vera, a lot of people were like, I don't know about that decision.
Yeah.
You know, it was a very close fight. But then, you know, he lost to Kyla Phillips. And I felt like
Kyla was good, man.
He looked great.
Night.
But
he
then he's
really
come off a loss
night.
Now. So, you know, that affects his value a little bit.
But in that fight, DC said, oh, Kyla's doing a great job of being gifted. And I was like, what the? I was rewinding it back. I was like, what does that mean? I'm just out here just being gifted, really.
That's what he does.
Yeah.
He's just gifted as fuck.
And like, Kyla seemed bigger than Song in that fight.
Yeah.
Like, he seemed bigger, but not at a detriment to his speed.
Mm-mm.
He was bigger and faster and in and out quicker. And yeah, man. But fair play to Song. Kyla whacked him a few times and he just sort of took him and just walked through it.
I still feel like we didn't see Song. Like really put his foot on the gas though. Like even all the way through the fight. I mean, he never like switched it up and seemed to really get after it. Maybe because he was just discouraged from earlier exchanges.
Just too elusive as well. Yeah. Kyla just seemed to be, he just couldn't get hold of him or even sort of pin him down. He was just off every time. Yeah. Yeah,
this is a different fight, though. I mean, you think back to Casey Kenny's recent fights, and he beats people up, but he stands in the pocket and beats them up. I mean, what he did to Alateng Haley with his body kick was brutal, and then he beat up Nathaniel Wood, you know, in a very competitive but a very aggressively paced fight, and then lost a split decision to Dominic Cruz. I mean, you know, he's right up there at the top of the division. I don't want to
stand in the pocket with Song Yadong, do you?
I don't know. I don't know. I think he's got a bit of a Mads Burnell kind of shoulder roll going on, because he does stand quite tight in the pocket and he does let stuff kind of bounce and roll off him.
Right.
Like that could be quite discouraging for Song Yadong, because he does throw with power and he does expect to hurt people when he lands. And if he keeps doing that, and every time he throws hands, Casey Kenny's chopping into his legs or kicking him in the body.
I just thought,
and he's a high level judoka as well, I believe. Kenny.
That
gives him a secondary option, which I don't know if Song Yadong's got. Good wrestling for MMA, but
Song's wrestling's good as well, right?
Yeah. But I think it's learned for MMA though. It's not like a system that he's got in his soul, like Casey Kenny's judo.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. I just thought the way Kyler beat Song would be a blueprint to take that movement away and then risk sitting in the pocket with Yadong might be a problem for him.
Yeah, maybe.
I saw Song as having more ways to win it.
You reckon Song's going to do it then?
A little bit. He needs it. Mm. He needs it to live up to all the hype.
He does.
You'd go Casey.
I think Casey Kenny might steal it. I think he might just have a higher pace. I mean, we might literally be, you know, looking at the numbers of strikes before they announce the decision.
Right.
You know what I mean? It might be one of those kind of fights. It might be like, yeah, but, you know, but Casey Kenny landed so many more low kicks and the damage was greater. And I think it might be one of those kind of fights, because they're quite evenly matched as far as, you know, as far as their athleticism and their build and their potential.
Be amazing. Not a great fight.
They're pretty much the same. I mean, you know, you've got Song Yadong's an inch taller and Casey Kenny's an inch longer in reach. Southpaw v orthodox, which means that Casey Kenny's going to be able to unload that body kick and leg kick over and over again. A slightly higher striking output for Casey Kenny. Slightly higher striking defense. Exactly the same striking accuracy at 42%. I mean, Song Yadong's got a slightly higher takedown accuracy, but I don't think he's going to have as much success against Casey Kenny. No, I don't. I'm leaning slightly towards Kenny. I feel like he's a more mature fighter, and I think that's going to pay off in this fight. He's going to approach this with more of a strategy instead of more of a being talented.
Yeah, just out there being talented again.
That's what he's doing.
Yeah.
Talented as fuck.
All right, cool.
Okay, so which way are you going? You're going...
I'm sticking with Song, yeah.
Sticking with his dong.
Sticking with the dong.
I think Casey Kenny's gonna just come outpace through. Him.
Yeah.
Okay, Tisha Torres against Angela Hill.
Yeah. These two have got
history, haven't they? Let's have a look. Let's have a look.
Yeah, she's got to build some consistency, Angela. I feel like we've spoke about her a few times on here, but she just needs to nail down that consistency.
Yeah.
I know you said before you think developing her elbow game, because she's controlling, she's got a good clinch, developing her inside elbow game would be a huge leap for her.
Mm.
I'm just not sure.
So Tisha Torres has a unanimous decision win over Angela Hill back ages ago, 2015. And has since then had a 4-fight losing streak, losing to Andrade, Joanna Zhang Weili, and Marina Rodriguez, but then has pulled it back with 2 wins recently.
Mm. The tough run of tough people to lose. Yeah, that
tough group
4 in a row. That's tough. Some tough girls.
Yeah, and Angela's, you know, she lost 2 split decisions. Aside, I mean, she was on a good streak. She lost to Yan Xiaonan by that unanimous decision back at 238. But then she had the doctor stoppage over Karina Losi. That was a nasty elbow. Hannah Cypher, she beat the funk out of her. And then she went 3 rounds with Loma Lukbunmi, who's got 10,000 Muay Thai fights. And she did really well in that fight. But then, you know, a split decision loss to Claudia Gadea and Michelle Watson. It's almost like okay, we found a ceiling.
Well, one of the things I was going to say is, say she goes on a, you know, she goes on a bit of a streak. Do you see her? Can you see her up there with Nida and Rodriguez and Mackenzie Dern? Like, is she gonna hang at that top of that division?
I think she's gonna be competitive, but I think she's gonna struggle overall. Yeah. I think she'll lose more than she wins. But then at the same time, you know, if she continues to develop, keep working on her game, you know, there's no reason why she can't bridge that gap. You know, I think this is gonna be a tough fight because they're both very quick. But Tisha Torres changes range much more. Yeah, like Angela Hill does stand a little bit more Muay Thai, a bit heavier on her rear leg, and Tisha Torres is very kind of wide stance, bouncing in and out. She's a bit erratic. She charges forward, tiny tornado, isn't it?
Yeah.
Charges forward, throwing a flurry of punches. But then if she runs herself into the clinch, that's when her physicality comes over. Mm. And I mean, she looks like she's been a lifelong gymnast.
Yeah.
You know, she's physically very strong. But if Angela Hill is able to stand her ground when she rushes her, dig that back foot in and meet her with elbows and knees, you know, there's no reason why Angela Hill can't win this fight. But I think she's going to swing and miss a lot. And I think that's going to be quite frustrating.
It's probably a decision, right?
Probably a decision.
They have a lot of decisions between them, don't they?
They do.
Probably ends up a decision. It's going to be pretty close.
And unless, you know, like I said, unless Angela can run her onto an elbow
or turn her
in the clinch and catch her with an elbow, and then, you know, then we're looking at doctor stoppages. Because she is lethal with those elbows. I think Tisha Torres wins a decision.
Yeah. Yeah, I was a little bit on the fence. I'd like to see Angela build some consistency because those, you know, a couple of split decisions, she's not that far away from it. It'd be interesting to see where she can get to in that division. But
yeah,
like I sort of alluded to, I'm not sure she's up there with the top women.
Not quite. Yeah. It's almost like she's found a ceiling. But I also feel like Tisha Torres' ceiling's kind of around the same area. Right. So
that's why it'll be a close decision.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what they're 8 and 9 in the top 10, is that right?
Hmm.
I mean, they're trading places, aren't they, really? Where are they? Oh, 10 and 12.
Right.
So Amanda Hibas is getting it from both sides.
I don't know where to go
with
that.
In the ranking sense.
I do not know where to go with that. I expect more from you.
No, you don't.
To be honest.
You don't. This is what happens. I devolve when I spend more time at the gym.
Mate, 100%. 100%.
Even like my posture's changing and like my forehead's dropping.
Eat off the floor now.
Oh, mate, of course. Of course. It's like the 5-minute rule is turning into the 5-hour rule. 5-minute rule, 5-second rule.
Here we go.
Here we go.
Here we go.
Here
five
we go.
Versus six. Ooh. Absolute pivotal fight for both of them in it.
Striker v. grappler.
Yep.
Are we talking cliches?
Vicente Luque versus Chiesa.
Which way are you going? Straight off the bat. Which way are you going?
Luque.
Yeah, are you?
Yeah.
What, striking clinic, stuffing his takedowns?
I think so. He's nasty, man, isn't he?
He's
got some real, real high-level striking.
Yeah.
And vicious. He's got that vicious ground and pound, and he's got that Anaconda and Darce setup, hasn't he, that he uses. Now, obviously, Case has got, he's got a very, very good ground game, controlling ground game, hasn't he? I'd be amazed if Vicente can sub him. But if he puts on a bit of a masterclass and beats him up and cuts him up and, you know, batters him, then, you know, who knows where that ends.
Yeah. The fight to watch, and I know it was a long time ago, but Chiesa against Masvidal is the fight to watch. I can see it going very much this way.
Right.
Like Luque walks him down, has the better of the striking exchanges. Yeah. We start getting some kind of sloppier entries from Chiesa, who will try and keep climbing to his back and stuff. But ultimately, in the hustle, I think Chiesa might get caught or hurt, elbow or knee, perhaps. And then, you know, we might shoot into a Darce or an Anaconda. I mean, that's what happened against Masvidal. That was a second round Darce. Kevin Lee caught him in a rear naked choke. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised, but I would imagine that Vicente Luque is going to try and stay in front of him.
Mm.
Neck attacks and Muay Thai and not try and take his back.
I mean, I think Chiesa can win this.
Oh,
there's ways he can win this.
He's a big dude for a welterweight as well. I know he came up from lightweight, but he is a big guy. Like, he could use his reach advantage in this fight.
And there's a reason he's, you know, ranked where he's ranked. Mm. I just, I mean, it's, it'll be fascinating to watch how it plays out standing and how quickly this Chiesa can get this to the floor. Because if you're massively rolling the dice if you're Chiesa and you choose to stand up for it any longer than you need to with Luque, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, he's going to get chopped down if he stays standing. You know, southpaw the orthodox again, so it opens up the body kicks for Luque, opens up the inside low kick. Plus the strikes landed per minute for Chiesa are considerably lower than Luque.
Mm.
Vicente Luque's 5.74 strikes per minute. Chiesa's 1.89. Yeah. It's really low, that is.
Yeah. Hey, hard
striking accuracy is low. Like, you know, maybe a smart thing for Chiesa to do would be to use his grappling skills to put him in advantageous positions to strike. Because often he seems to be trying to prove a point that his jiu-jitsu is awesome. And you know what I mean? He bypasses opportunities to beat someone up to try and sub them.
Yeah.
And I think when it gets to this level, this echelon of contender, you've got to just take them out any way you can. Mm. And you've got to put as much money in the bank as possible as the fight progresses, because he's going to be taking chunks out of Chiesa.
Yeah.
Like the venom in this fight is definitely on Luque's side. And, you know, that could be the deciding factor.
Yeah, I agree.
I like Chiesa, but I do think this is a tough fight for him. He's not got a reach advantage either.
He's quite nice. He seems quite a nice dude, Chiesa. Do you know what
he
I mean?
Is. He's wicked. He's wicked.
Just a bit of,
we had dinner with him a couple of times in Fight Island, didn't we? Yeah. No, he is a good dude, Chiesa. He's a lot of fun.
And not that Vicente isn't, but there's some spite in when he throws. He throws and he throws the hurt. You're bad.
Yeah. He's in his head. He's ready to be in the mix with the top contenders. Mm. And I don't think Chiesa's quite arrived at that level of confidence yet. I think he might, you know, he says it, but
yeah,
I think actually, you know, feeling it, believing it is a different thing.
He slipped up with Wonder Boy, didn't he? That was his slip up. But that's
Chiesa.
No.
Luque.
Yeah. He slip up with Wonder Boy.
Yeah,
I'm sure he did.
It was a decision. I mean,
we know what sort of puzzle that is, isn't it? Yeah. That's a tricky puzzle for anyone.
He's had some good runs. Like, if you look at him coming off the Ultimate Fighter, Ultimate Fighter 21 back in 2015, he's got Anaconda, Dars, first round stoppage, and that last one that I mentioned was Bilal Muhammad.
Yeah.
Then he loses a decision to Leon Edwards. Then he darses Nico Price. He stops Chad Laprise in the first. Stops Jalen Turner in the first. Brian Barberina in the third. Derek Krantz in the first. Split decisions Mike Perry and wrecks his nose.
Yeah.
I was on the flight back
from
Uruguay. Mate, he was smelling round corners on the way home from that flight. It was bad.
Yeah.
It was one of the worst nose breaks I've ever seen. It was from a knee. Then loses a decision to Thompson, and now he's pulled back three good wins, including
Price, Brown, Woodley, Woodley.
Yeah, this is definitely a step up for Chiesa, and I think it's Luque's time to move on, and Chiesa's time to establish, and I don't think this is the fight to do it.
Yeah, it's tough. I've definitely got Luque.
Yeah. One thing I will say about Chiesa though is he'll try and train with everybody in the building.
Right.
Like, he was pulling mats out into corridors to train with Nogueira and stuff. He's a real student of the game.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, good fight, but I'm leaning towards Luque on that one.
Mm.
Okay, co-main.
Wow.
Right?
I couldn't be more of a fan of this fight, really.
Tell me about it.
Jose is just, he's just a legend, isn't he? He's just a, you know, he's given us so many good fights to watch, and his techniques and his toughness and how nasty he is. He's just, and like Pedro Munhoz, we've mentioned numerous times, he's, you know, he's a fan favourite. He's someone that he's never bought a boring fight, has he?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Pedro Frankie fight was like insane level and insane output. It's fun to watch. Like they've fought twice, right? They got one in the bank, haven't they? They're one and one.
Very similar fights as well. The point of difference being the calf kick.
Yeah.
Like I've done a war room on this and the main event.
Right.
The thing that stuck out in my mind Pedro Munoz landed 40 low kicks against Jimmy Rivera in that last fight.
Yeah.
And we all know that Aldo, from back in the WEC days, was a low kick destroyer. Mm. But he has dropped off recently. You know, I think his last fight, he threw
maybe
too
cool for it. Like, he was doing it before it was cool, and now he's like, I don't need that
now
shit.
Now he's not
anymore.
Into it anymore. Now he's looking for body shots.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think this is a very competitive striking match. Mm. I think Aldo's maybe slightly slower than he used to be, and I think his pace is not as good as it was, but this is three rounds. I think Aldo over three rounds looks really
it's
good.
Pretty good.
You know, that lead leg is going to be the key for both guys, because they're going to be smashing their lead legs. And Aldo,
you know, they're the same age.
That's crazy, isn't it?
That does not feel like, when you just look at those two names, you not think they're the same age.
No way.
They're chronologically, they're the same age.
Chronologically. So, but as physically, far as fighter years and dog years, very similar.
Yeah.
You know, Aldo's like 48.
I mean, Munoz must be less worn. He must
you
be less
would think
worn.
So. But he does stand in the pocket and take a lot of shots.
Yeah.
Like, he does stand in the pocket and take a lot of shots.
Yeah, I love him because he'll do that.
Like, if you think back to Aldo's career when he was coming through WEC and moving over to the UFC as the featherweight champ, he wasn't getting beaten up in his fights much. I mean, he was too fast for most people. Like, he handled Chad Mendes twice. Yeah.
So,
you know,
it's quite, I had this question down already for you. So, where's peak Aldo? Is it coming out of WEC? Is it that Mendes, Edgar, Chan Sung Jung, role that he sort of went on?
Let's have a look.
He's a touch older. He's a touch slower now. But there was a time where, you know, there was a lot of people talking about Jose Aldo.
Let's have a look. Okay, so, some of these fights were just brutal.
That's that chronological age versus actual fight age.
Well, the first one I would advise anybody to watch is Jose Aldo Cub Swanson at WEC 41, where he stops him with a flying knee in 8 seconds, and it was, like, you know when MVP sparks, didn't spark him, but smashed his face, literally. Cyborg.
Yeah.
The way that Cyborg went down holding his face, like, Cub Swanson looked like he was in a lot of pain. It was such a cleanly timed knee, and he was so fast. Then he stopped Mike Brown with punches in the second round. Then he beat the
shit out of Uriah.
Mate, that leg was gross. It was unbelievable.
That's what I'm sort of alluding to. Like, is that Swanson, Brown, Faber, Manny Gaborian?
I wonder if they've got the stats.
I
don't think so. I think it was later than that. I think he was still quite reckless in those times. Hominick was an awesome performance. Mm. But that first fight against Mendes was probably his best performance at the time. I mean, the way that he handled Frankie Edgar and the Korean Zombie when he faced him, Chad Mendes the second time. I would say between
he's peaking going into Conor.
I think so. I think maybe he was at his peak when he signed with the UFC, and then he stayed at his peak for, I mean, what is that? That's three years.
1, 2. Yeah, there you go. That's
is that about right?
Yeah.
I'd say that. I think the best performance is that first stoppage over Chad Mendes was awesome. His 156 fight against Frankie Edgar, absolutely electric. And then his second fight against Chad Mendes. Like, there are certain moments in that I can pick out and go, like, there was a point where Mendes tried to take him down and he did like a double hip bomb.
I know exactly the bit you mean.
That is just so, it's so,
it was like an air sprawl at one stage, wasn't it? It was just like left hip, right hip, left hip.
He was so good. I mean, you know, in recent years, that body shot over Jeremy Stephens was one of the best I've seen. But I definitely think that was his peak. Maybe between the Chad Mendes fights, maybe Chad got the best of him both ends.
Unfortunate for Chad. Yeah.
You got the worst of both ends.
I mean, this will be brutal, right? There's no way this fight is not, you know,
no,
it's not going to be brutal. It'll be a massacre
for sure. And I'm thinking the hard nose style of Pedro Munoz might put him in range to hurt Aldo. And I can see him attacking a neck. You know, he's got wicked guillotines if Aldo gets hurt.
Yeah,
but then at the same time, he puts himself right in range to take shots. And Aldo's not going to take those calf kicks without giving you something back. Yeah. It just might not be low kicks.
It's too much to ask for Aldo.
It's a tough ask.
I don't feel like Pedro's slowed down. Like, no, if I watched him recently, you know, he's got a good tempo to him. Yeah. Whereas Aldo, you know,
he's got pace and not speed. That's a good way to consider Pedro Munhoz. He's not a speedy fighter, but he's well paced.
Yeah.
And he's a bit heavy on his feet.
He'll keep at 80% the whole time, won't he? And he'll pressure at 80%.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which way are you going?
I just don't know if it's just a bridge too far for Jose Aldo, you know?
A bridge too far.
It feels bad trying to pick against him, though.
I know, if you're being logical. If you're being logical, you go with Pedro Munhoz by avalanche, just by being too much.
Yeah.
Just bang, 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 chop. Chop.
It's three rounds though. You know what I mean? Like
level change. Yeah. Aldo hustles up. He's
and they go
a bit
again.
More tired.
And
then it's bang,
again,
bang,
yeah.
bang, chop, chop.
Yeah.
You know, then maybe he catches Aldo and rocks him. Aldo level changes into a guillotine. You know, that's a scenario if I play it out a few times in my head, I come
See
around
that
to that. The pressure breaking Aldo up against the fence.
I like a bit of logic.
Of course, you like a
I
bit
like
of logic.
I like a bit of logic.
You know, you like numbers and maths and
yeah,
all
like
that kind
bit.
Of
I like
shit.
A bit of logic.
I think Aldo's going to do it.
Dia.
No.
Pedro.
I like both of these guys. Yeah, I'm not. I would struggle to pick either way.
That's definitely my favourite fight on the card.
Yeah. They're my favourite two fighters on the card.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they're facing one another.
Yeah.
I think fight of the night, it's going to be tough for them to beat Kenny and Yudong and Fiziev and Bobby Green. Because I think although Pedro Munhoz can set a pace that would compare... I don't think Aldo's at that stage anymore.
Yeah.
I think he's more about precision.
Yeah.
Saved it.
We'll lock him in. Lock Pedro in.
Okay. Derek, do you want a quick check to see if he's ready to record with Phil Rowe? We'll do the main event.
So when we talk about our trifecta of types of athlete in the... Or types of fighter in the...
Yeah, the archetypes.
Yeah. I mean, this is...
It's called a Venn diagram, isn't it?
Is that what it's called? Venn diagram? Yeah, there you go.
Three intersecting...
So, these are quite clear, right? You've got a martial arts athlete in Cyril Gane, like, quite clearly, and you've got almost an out-and-out fighter in Derek Lewis.
Yeah.
I think you said, like, Derek has that... He just has that in embossed violence on his DNA. Like when it goes, it goes. Like he's hitting you with some serious heat and he's hitting you to end you. Whereas you don't necessarily see that from Cyril Gane, right? He's very athletic. Obviously, you know, he's trying to inflict damage on his opponent, but it just doesn't seem in the same way. Like he's a bit more controlled. You can see I don't know if this is going to make sense, but you can see martial arts coming out of him. You can see technique coming out of him. And obviously that's coupled with his athleticism because he's incredibly athletic for a guy that size, the way he moves and the bounce he has.
This is an interesting conversation, though, is how their athleticism compares. Because Cyril Gane is, you know, rubber bands and jumping rope and bouncing in and out and circuit training and all that kind of stuff. Derek Lewis is, I can generate this massive amount of force like a shot putter. Mm. Like it'd be an awesome shot putter. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because he just needs to launch this thing one time.
Gone.
You know, as hard as he can. Yeah. But like, because that's what his, like say if they were their superpowers, if Derek Lewis is the, you know, the wrecking ball, and Cyril Gane is the electric man. You know, he zaps him and stings him.
Yeah.
Dzz, dzz, you know what I mean? Like a bit tasers him every time he touches him. Like the two differences in the power mean that Lewis always knows he only needs one shot, whereas Cyril always knows he needs a volume. So his volume's measured and applied, whereas Derek Lewis applies it violently, recklessly, because he only knows he needs one, and he doesn't bolster it with anything else. I think this is quite interesting, because you look at Derek Lewis, and although he does, you know, the skip lead high kick and the jumping knee, and sometimes he'll work a body lock, the focus is always, this is the easiest way for me to end a fight. Yeah. So I'm gonna
manipulate what's in front of me to get it
for sure,
get it done.
Whether it's walking down or backing up and waiting for them to come to him, Cyril. Like when he's throwing, like Derek Lewis will try and take your head off with one right hand. Cyril will try and connect with your chin and tag you. You know, try and sting you. and he'll measure it and he'll pull it out and he'll be away. But this is why we've not seen him take any clean shots so far in his career. I mean, I know he's only had 9 fights in MMA, but I can't think of anybody that's hit him cleanly. And Tanabosa is one of the quickest heavyweights on the roster, and he couldn't get close to him.
Yeah.
Like, to the point where he was frustrated and he was getting caught with counters.
Like, that's like a superpower at heavyweight. You know what I mean? Being able to not get hit at heavyweight is like, you don't really see it, do you?
Not at all.
You know, Tanabosa, we're saying he's fast, but he gets hit, he gets clipped.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Cyril's fascinating from an athletic point of view.
Yeah.
You don't see big guys move like that. You don't necessarily see big guys with the array of techniques that he has. Mm. But I don't know. Part of me wonders whether if you're going to be the champ of the heavyweights, is different, isn't it? It's just different.
Yeah.
You're going to be the champ of the heavyweights. Do we need to see some venom?
I mean,
I don't know. Does it work?
Like, did we see venom out of? Did we see venom out of Usman in his last couple of performances against Masvidal and Gilbert Burns? Or was it measured precision power?
That phrase makes more sense to me.
It does, right?
But heavyweights.
Yeah, but there's a value to precision power. Mm. And, you know, Cyril Gane's 245 pounds. Like, if he can't generate knockout punches, then he needs to learn how to strike all over again.
Yeah.
Because just generally someone who's 6'4", I mean, he's got a 2-inch reach advantage on Derek Lewis as well. He's a faster fighter. He's 15, 20 pounds lighter. It doesn't mean he shouldn't be able to generate the same force. I tell you, if you put him on a DEXA scan, Derek Lewis is probably looking a bit lighter than Cyril Gane.
Yeah, it's probably similar lean mass.
Yeah, but the difference is Cyril Gane's got like marathon runner muscle tissue where he can go for 25 minutes. But because of that, he's had to refine his game.
He's got that hybrid, though, because he has the tendons of a sprinter where he can bounce and get in and out very quickly.
But then do they not fatigue?
Not necessarily the tendons. The mass of his muscle in sprinters fatigues, but the tendons are just elastic properties. I think we've said this before. I think Cyril Gane's the future.
Mm.
Like, I do think that archetype comes through. You know, it's just the heavyweight thing. Like, the heavyweights, man, it's just different.
Yeah.
It's just different.
I mean no disrespect to Derek Lewis in this way, but he's almost like the 21st century Tank Abbott. Mm. Like, when people are watching Tank Abbott, they're like, yeah, he shouldn't
not gonna
win.
Last.
He
it's
shouldn't
not gonna,
win. But, well,
he's winning.
Yeah, yeah, you know what I mean? I know Tank Abbott, before anybody says it, you know, he was a power lifter, and he had a wrestling background.
Yeah.
He was a seasoned brawler. Let's put it that way. Derek Lewis is the same version of that same fighter. He's the same archetype as a Tank Abbott. Like, Tank Abbott shouldn't be the heavyweight champion of the world because he should always stumble at those final hurdles where the guys meet power and athleticism with better technique. And like I said, I'm not saying that Cyril Gane doesn't have power. I just think that he maybe is so measured that he doesn't really unleash it. I mean, when you see him fight Dontell Mays, who again is about 6'4", 6'5", catches him with a clean flying knee up against the fence that drops him. He does get after it sometimes, but that may be what costs him in the Derek Lewis fight.
Mm.
And I also wonder if the pressure of him coming off 2 25-minute decisions, whether there's pressure...
Just whispers in his ear about needing to... I mean, this is a different challenge for Derek, striking challenge for Derek, because Curtis, Olenek, Latifi and Ivanov is not the same. That's not the same picture he's being presented with.
No, it's not.
They look like they've seen that Derek can whack and they want to know whether he can deal with wrestlers. So they gave him four guys in a row.
Yeah.
Obviously you passed that test, but This is a very different challenge.
It is very different. I mean, you know, Ivanov is very flat-footed. You know, he's a small heavyweight as well. He's undersized. Latifi was coming up to heavyweight and, you know, was desperate to get the takedown and struggled. Olenek is an anomaly. He's such an anomaly in the division. And Curtis Blaydes is a fantastic wrestler whose kryptonite is one-punch knockout artists. Like, this is the thing. If you put Curtis Blaydes up against Cyril Gane, like, Curtis Blaydes most likely will be able to take Cyril Gane down and hold him down and beat
him
up.
There, yeah.
But the punch power difference between Derek Lewis and Cyril Gann is the difference in the result of that fight against Curtis Blaydes. And of course, I'm only speculating, but my money would be on Curtis Blaydes going into that fight with Cyril Gann. Like, if you're Curtis Blaydes, you want Cyril Gann to beat Derek Lewis and then go on and beat Ngannou so he can get a title shot against someone that doesn't...
Because he knows he's probably got the game that fits the puzzle.
Yeah. And like I said, nothing against Derek Lewis, but he's just not a good expression of high-level mixed martial arts. He's an expression of what refinement of raw power can be at the most basic level and how far that can get you at a heavyweight.
Yeah.
Right?
But like we've said a few times, you couldn't do that in other weights. The necessity for higher skills across a broader range changes a little bit at heavyweight.
For sure.
Where, you can for now get away with it, but I don't think you're going to get away with it for long because how hard can you punch? Like in 10 years, the Derek Lewis of in 10 years time is not going to punch much harder than Derek Lewis. Like there's a finite level that we can get to.
Yeah.
But breadth and depth of technique is, good luck. When do you master it?
That's it. The amount of Derek Lewis type heavyweights in the US right now might be 100.
Yeah.
In 10 years, if it's 1,000, then the skill level is going to be much higher than the current Derek Lewis that we've got.
Yeah.
I would say Derek Lewis would probably beat Tank Abbott.
You would think you would.
But the Tank Abbott archetype, the Derek Lewis archetype in 5-10 years time should be able to beat Derek Lewis by being a better fighter.
I just wonder whether I don't think you can be that archetype in 10 years time. Like the filtration process is people just get too good.
They'll still exist. They'll just be on like...
They'll just be better.
Yeah, they'll just be on lower level shows. Yeah.
Or they'll have that, it'll be recognised early and the breadth and depth of technique will be coached into them.
True that. Yeah. And they won't, the money will be better in the sport, so they won't go to NFL and NBA and MLB and football and whatever else to do.
Yeah. There's a lot of power punches in them sports. They just don't know about it.
Mate, I was thinking about this, right? You're like, okay. Like Derek Lewis was in better shape when he signed his UFC contract. Mm. He might have been a bit lighter, but he was in better shape, right? Imagine if there was NFL money in the UFC and all of a sudden the likes of Larry Fitzgerald comes over. Yeah. Like, can you... Like, he's like a super version of John Jones.
Yeah.
Like, imagine taking a Larry Fitzgerald and training him up from when he was like 12 or 15.
Yeah.
You know?
Insane.
And he grows into that kind of athlete. Like MMA in 10 years time is going to look like some kind of sci-fi fucking thing. Isn't it?
Well, they call the NFL the freak league, don't they? Because you basically can't play unless you're genetically a freak. You know, you're the top 0.1%.
Mate, honestly,
this is a dangerous game to be turning this into the freak league.
When I was training in Vegas with Frank Mir, and we were going up to run in Mount Charleston, he would bring a friend with him who used to play for the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah.
And we must have fucking looked like Russian dolls. Like, for as big as Frank Mir was compared to me, this guy was that big again compared to Frank. Yeah. He was massive.
Yeah, it's just... I don't think people... Until you meet someone, say an offensive lineman, until you meet someone and you see what 360 pounds looks like, you don't get it.
That's crazy.
You just don't get it.
What super athletes that you've worked with stuck out in your mind? Anybody that you think, MMA, give me 6 months. Bring him over to Rough House for 6 months.
We're
at the Tuilagi brothers.
I mean, they're what I say.
I remember which one of the brothers was it that was benching 240 kilos?
Well, he dropped 200 on his chest. Did I ever tell you about that?
No.
He's got 200 kilos in an open grip like this. Just benching it for fun, like just like, well, whatever, and it slipped off. Bounced off his chest, caught it again, just racked it up. Just went off for a little walk. Henry Tuilagi, who I had at Leicester, was 100... This was in shape. So he's out of shape now, and I think he's 139, 140 kilos. So he was
kilos.
So he was 129 kilos in shape. Like, and don't forget, you're running in rugby.
Yeah.
You're not on the, you're not doing 6 seconds work, having a rest. You know, you have to have the capabilities of running 2K, but completely, you've got, say, 6-7K you're putting under your belt. He would... Yeah.
Would he be?
Yeah. He would be that. Well, he'd have he would to cut be to that heavyweight. Heavyweight. You'd have to get him early, though. You'd have to get him real early.
Jeez. So 230 kilo. Sorry, 130 kilos is 286 pounds.
Yeah, that's a big boy. And I don't think he would be that big on in the NFL. I think, you know, there's bigger dudes. There's much bigger dudes.
Yeah.
The most talented guy that would just pick it up. Like he would pick it up by accident. He's Quade Cooper,
right?
Like, and he went into boxing and he just like basically got it. I got it now. And it was obviously a managed boxing career. Like they picked the right guys for him and stuff. But fair play, man. He could just move. Mm. He could just move and he was coachable and he just got it. And his ability to manipulate space. He understood space, but he did that on the rugby field. His whole position was about moving people around without them really knowing. They were being moved around and then putting the ball in different directions or putting people through. And he just understood space. And I think you spend enough time in pro sport and performance sport, being able to manipulate space seems to be a common
big part.
Theme across all sports. It's like, you know space, well, you'll be good.
Yeah,
you'll be good at whatever.
It's like it's space management, and then off the back of that, being able to predict and manipulate what people are going to do.
Yeah.
Like you're always...
It, being able to manipulate you without you knowing you're being manipulated.
Yeah, it's a bit of voodoo. It is a bit. But, you hear people saying it across team sports, you know, if someone's a veteran of the game, he can read the game really well. That basically means that he can see all the pieces on the table and he can predict which ways they're going to move.
Yeah.
And then find his way through
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Like, we would... It's changed a little bit now, but we'd have long debates about we might have talked about this before, GPS reading. So you put a GPS on your back and I know how far you've run and, you know, how many sprints you've done and whatever. Mm. But some of the best players weren't doing the most. They were just doing the most efficient. Mm. I'm not running over there. He's going to be over here in a minute. Why would I waste that 50 meters there when I could just wait here? It's all going to come back around and I'll do my job.
Yeah.
You know, and it was like, you can't always have a quantitative measure on something that has a qualitative essence to it. Do you know what I mean? It's like, okay, throw 1,000 punches. I'm gonna throw 5. I'm gonna land them right on the button.
Yeah,
you know,
that's the Derek Lewis circles us right back to this fight. Does Derek Lewis land the one big punch, or does Cyril Gane land the 500 that he needs to land to win over 25 minutes?
I think Cyril wins it.
You do?
I think Cyril wins it. But
what decision? The problem is,
it's like, all right, Derek Lewis, bet against me. Go on then, bet against me. That's exactly what I want you to do.
Yeah.
Go on, bet against me. Yeah. It's fine. I'm going to do the same thing either way.
I mean, we kind of should bet against Derek Lewis, because everyone that Derek Lewis faces should be better than him, technically.
Yeah.
Because he should
keeps winning.
I think Lewis is going to catch him.
Do you?
I do. I think Cyril's going to feel pressure from his last two decision wins, both 25 minutes. Mm. I think he's going to feel like he's got Derek Lewis hurt or tired. I mean, you know, the two fights that stick out in my mind with Derek Lewis is Volkov,
yeah,
where he bingoed him in the last 10 seconds. But the other one is Travis Brown. Like, right. Travis Brown had him hurt with front kicks to the body, he had him hurt with knees, and he got too close, and he got a whiff of that right hand, and it put him down twice.
Yeah. Can't write him off, can you?
You can't. Because I think at some point people need to get close to him to do something in 25 minutes. He only needs one.
Yeah.
And I hate to say it, but I think he might be able to clip Cyril. I would like to see Cyril win, but I do also think it's a bit early in his career, you know. And, you know, I don't think Derek Lewis and Ngannou too would be a bad thing, because they've both got a point to prove after the last one was so bad. So which way are you going then? You're going Cyril?
Yeah, I'm going Cyril. I'm betting on the future.
Of course you are.
I'm betting on the future.
On the specimen.
Yeah.
Nice one. Well, I'll go Derek Lewis just to switch it up then.
Right.
Wicked.
Good stuff. Jump on fullreptile.co.uk and check out all the brand new t-shirts and snapbacks
and the Patreon.
Training line. Jump on the Patreon. Jump on the Patreon. Patreon.com/fullreptile. Fucking this up real good, aren't I?
You're terrible at it.
Patreon.com/fullreptile for the behind the scenes Roughhouse Uncensored. You won't regret it. It's very funny. A lot of the time at my expense. Nice, mate.
Nice one.
See you next week.
Catch you next time. Cheers.